John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, July 11th, 2012. Israel plans to begin deportations of internationals living in the West Bank, and the Palestinian Authority calls for elections in October. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli Ynet News reported that the Israeli Central Command Chief, Nitzan Alon, signed an order granting the Israeli Population and Immigration Authority the right to search for and arrest internationals illegally living in the occupied West Bank in order to deport them. He said that there were a large number of infiltrators currently residing in the West Bank without a permit from Israel, and said that they must all be sent back to their countries. Internationals living in the occupied West Bank cannot renew their visas due to the fact that the Palestinian Authority cannot issue such visas, and Israel refused to grant them visas due to the fact that they live in Palestinian areas. This policy also affects internationals who are married to Palestinians, since Israel refuses to grant family reunification documents. In other news, the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, led by Fatah's Mahmoud Abbas, has called on Tuesday for fresh elections to be held on October 20th, yet Hamas has rejected this unilateral action. Agency France Presse reported that a local official had spoken with them under conditions of anonymity, stating that local, municipal, and district elections would be held. Prior attempts at holding similar such elections have failed to materialize, with the most recent attempts coming in July and October of 2011. Following the release of the AFP report, Reuters released an article quoting Hamas spokesman Sami Abu Zuhri. He criticized the Palestinian Authority for taking a unilateral step and leveled charges of undermining reconciliation. Last week, Hamas suspended voter registration, and the Palestinian Authority have stated that as a result, elections may only take place in the West Bank, returning to the political division overshadowing Palestinian politics since 2007. Hamas have said that voter registration was suspended following the continued detention of Hamas party members in the West Bank by Palestinian Authority security forces. In Hebron, Ma'an News reported that a French citizen was injured when Israeli military fired tear gas canisters and sound grenades into Al-Laban Market in the Old City. Israeli forces then closed all entrances to the Old City where 800 Israeli settlers and 30,000 Palestinians live. And finally, Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights reported that Israeli soldiers shot and killed 15 Palestinians during the latest escalation against the Gaza Strip in June, including 3 children. At least 75 residents, including 16 children and 5 women, were wounded. It added that Israeli strikes and bombardment against the civilian population led to the complete destruction of 5 homes and caused damage to 51 homes, in addition to 11,200 square meters of agricultural lands, agricultural water wells, and several farms and factories, in addition to several other civilian structures. As for attacks against Palestinian fishermen, the center said that the army continued to prevent them from fishing in Palestinian territorial waters and continued to limit their fishing zone to only 3 nautical miles. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, July 11th Daily News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Kelly Joyner.
Afghanistan, 11th of July. NATO is reporting a death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 9th of July. Suicide attackers tried to storm the police headquarters in Kandahar, failing to enter the compound after what may have been their big suicide bomb in a 3-wheel mini truck suffered a premature detonation, going off while they were still underway at the police headquarters. 3 cops and 2 children were killed, 18 police and 12 civilians were wounded. A total of 14 attackers either blew themselves up or were shot down after a 2-hour gun battle with police. Afghanistan, 9th of July. Another suicide bomber attacked a police headquarters in Shabergan, the capital of Jawzjan province in northern Afghanistan. This attack wounded 26 people, including 2 cops, a prosecutor, and a doctor. Afghanistan, 10th of July. A remote-controlled bomb damaged 1 vehicle in an attack on a convoy on the Nazarbagh Road at Jumkan Clay. Nobody was killed. Pakistan, ongoing. In response to the government's reopening of NATO supply convoy routes into Afghanistan, insurgents are promising major attacks on any and all government installations. Already, insurgents have begun to deliver on this promise with a Monday, July 9th attack that killed 8 soldiers at a Pakistani army camp. Insurgents are also operating more openly, with government-imposed travel bans on known insurgents to fly to stage a Taliban demonstration in Islamabad. Afghanistan, ongoing. Some years ago, CIA case officers, the folks who recruit local spies, may have been covered as doctors engaged in a vaccination campaign. The Taliban somehow found out and have responded by blocking a polio vaccination campaign entirely. Rumors are now flying that the vaccine somehow contains the AIDS virus or is designed to sterilize young girls. Not as bad as hacking off vaccinated arms in the Hollywood movie Apocalypse Now set in Vietnam, but the same ruthlessly effective political concept. Mr. Barack Obama, you cannot win a war against this kind of opposition on their own turf. Withdrawal in 2014 means 2 more years of this kind of killing. Now is the time to pull the plug on the war, bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again. And
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com. In Seattle, on the 10th of July, a police SWAT team smashed down the door of a home in which members of Occupy Seattle and the Red Spark Collective lived. They stormed in throwing concussion grenades like they expected all-out armed resistance, the kind they would have gotten in Afghanistan. According to a report posted to www.occupywallstreet.org, a neighbor reported, quote, "Suddenly we heard the bang of their grenade and crashing as the police entered the apartment. The crashing and stomping continued for a long time as they tore the place apart. When it was over, nobody had been arrested, and the search warrant papers listed only anarchist material and clothing worn at a May Day protest as the items to be searched for and stolen. Nobody was arrested, as it is not illegal to be an anarchist." In exactly one way, the residents of this home were lucky. They were not suspected of being Muslims. Had they been Muslims, the SWAT team might have opened fire on sight, and everyone would have been arrested without charges. I wonder how those pigs in the SWAT team would like to try that in Afghanistan, where they would face powerful and effective resistance. Still, this raid indicates, well, first they came for the Muslims, then they came for environmental and animal rights activists, and now they are coming for the Occupy movement and anarchists. Will they come for you tomorrow if you don't vote a straight GOP ticket and have a perfect attendance record at work and at a fundamentalist church? The 11th of July marked the third day of the trial of several people involved in the Free Franklin and Occupy DC takeover of the abandoned Franklin School at 13th and K Streets Northwest. Supporters have been in the courtroom each day of this trial, as well as flyering outside Franklin. You may remember the November 19th, 2011 occupation of this building by Occupy DC. A homeless shelter had operated there until former Mayor Fenney closed it in 2008. It had opened after an earlier occupation of the building by May Day DC in 2002 after the police and housing inspector raid on the Olive Branch. Another May Day DC takeover kept former Mayor Williams from closing it in 2003 at the request of McDonald's at 13th and New York Avenue. Then Fenney took office promising, quote, "If you're not happy, I'm not happy," in 2007.
My commitment is you guys will be happy or I'm not happy.
But then closing the shelter in 2008. Since then, both Fenney and now Mayor Gray have attempted to declare the historic public school building surplus so it could be sold to a developer instead of being used to benefit the community. Here is an update after the second day of the trial from the support team.
Virginia, I'm here at the trial today. The second day of the trial, we're down at 500 Indiana Avenue, and we're going to give you a little update about what's happening so far. So the thing about unlawful entry is what our friends are being charged with, is that unlawful entry doesn't stick if the defendants have a good faith belief that what they're doing is not illegal. So we're arguing that they had that good faith belief because Franklin Shelter is public property because Franklin Shelter was illegally closed and that the community supported folks going into Franklin Shelter.
The prosecution seemed to recognize the political nature, public property, who owns what, how much does the community own, who has control, and it seemed like the prosecution made attempts of preempting those arguments. They wanted to keep it very law and order, tied it, you know, said despite however right or wrong the morality or the politics or the social arguments may be, this is a cut and dry question of law and order.
It was a stressful morning. The jury actually hasn't been in yet because they were arguing preliminary motions about whether part of the defense's theory was permissible. Basically, the judge ruled The judge ruled that she would not allow the defense to argue to the jury that the defendants had a good faith belief that based on past occupations of the Franklin shelter, that based on, you know, the controversy over whether it should have been closed and was closed rightly, that they were legally allowed to be in there in order to use it to serve community needs. I think that that Jesse, who's one of the defendants speaking for himself, as well as Kenita, who represents the other defendants, I'm looking forward to hearing them lay out the case. What they do say is going to be really compelling, and I hope that the jury will hear that too.
Now, isn't that just like the police and prosecutors? Try to cheat in a trial when defendants have a legally valid reason for their alleged conduct. Trying to exclude the entire defense is one way miscarriages of justice are born. The defendants need our support. Another miscarriage of justice is throwing the homeless out on the street so Franklin School can be sold to a developer. Here, too, we need your support to block any such sale. On the 9th of July, Walmart was in the middle of celebrating the 50th anniversary of opening their first store. In D.C., opponents of Walmart staged a vigil at the proposed Georgia Avenue and Missouri Avenue Walmart location, demanding that that store never be built. Vigilers used paper tape to spell "No Walmart" on the fence, and speaker after speaker denounced Walmart's vicious behavior. As the sun was set, candles were lit. DC's churches are warning Walmart that they will share the fate of previous businesses that thought they could operate without regard for community needs. Reverend Hagler gave two examples of businesses that tried and failed to trample on the community near his church.
In 1993, bulldozers started clearing a lot across the street from the church. And I was interested in what was going on over there and found out that the Exxon Corporation had bought the lot to put in a gas station to try to capitalize off of the volume of traffic that went up and down North Capitol Street and across Riggs in Missouri. We got in front, we stopped the bulldozer. Folks said to us, and I had preachers call me up to say stop because you know you can't beat that corporation. That land belongs to that corporation. You can't do anything about it. You need to simply pick up the phone, call them, and see what you can get out of the deal. I refused to call them to see what I could get out of the deal. The community had said that they wanted housing on that site. And so we continued that fight. That fight went on for 10 years. 10 years. Exxon couldn't build anything. We couldn't move on it. We had fought them at least to a standstill. 10 years later, we put up on that corner 69 units of subsidized senior housing.
All right,
that's occupied, that's functioning, that's keeping people in their neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, the issue is, and I raised that story, because you can fight the giant.
Yes, you can.
If you got the determination. If you don't blink, if you don't falter, we can make a difference. And the fact is, I got news for Walmart that if they come, the battle ain't over there.
Right.
Because the reality is,
right.
When we went up, if you remember this, Renee, against Tiger Market down there, we had told Tiger Market that we didn't have problem with the grocery store, but we had problems with another store coming into the community and getting a liquor license. We already had too many liquor stores.
They keep playing.
The ABC board looked at us, said to me, "You're absolutely correct. It's in our regulations, but we're going to give them their license anyway because it's economic development."
Yeah.
They didn't understand that that afternoon we put a picket line on that store. We didn't take that picket line down for a year. Every day we were there harassing their customers, harassing their base. A year later, that store went bankrupt because we refused to blink. They refused to blink, but in fact, they paid the cost because they refused to blink.
You may wonder, what's wrong with Walmart? Why shouldn't I shop at Walmart and eat their substandard meat and wear their clothes that seem to wear out the day after you buy them? I like their lower prices. Well, here's what else is wrong with Walmart, again courtesy of Reverend Hagler.
We forget when Trayvon Martin was killed in Florida. Walmart was one of those corporations that helped frame the Stand Your Ground legislation that took hold all across the country. The battle that the NAACP is lifting up right now around voter suppression was crafted and funded by the Walters. And one of the things we were talking about earlier with Reverend Bell was that the Waltons' worldview is so radically different than your worldview. Their worldview is of a plantation. Their worldview is that the world is their plantation. I was down in Bentonville, got on the plane coming back from Walmart, turned around and looked at who was getting on the plane. And you got to remember, this is a little airport down in Arkansas, built for Walmart. And you look around, and the whole world is getting on the plane. And you sit up there and say, well, where are all these folks from? They're from Indonesia. They're from India. They're from every place where somebody is able to run a sweatshop. Why do you think they can deliver goods so cheap? Because they operate in a sharecropper's mentality. Amen. They own the land, they own the means of distribution, and they make the world work as slaves to produce.
Here's some examples of how they treat people like slaves, courtesy of another speaker at the vigil on the 9th of July against Walmart opening at Georgia Avenue and Missouri Avenue here in D.C.
Most recently, there's been issues around a crawfish supplier to Walmart in Louisiana where some of the workers were forced to go on strike after being forced to work 24-hour days or more by their employer in you know, what were really slave-like conditions at that crawfish cooking and peeling the fish. There's also a lot of issues in Thailand with people who, companies that supply shrimp to Walmart, and people having their passports taken away before they go out on these shrimp boats.
In addition to exploiting people all over the world, Walmart is also famous for destroying local businesses. Years ago, I was in Fayetteville, North Carolina. That town was what I call Walmart nuked. There was a brand new Walmart. Almost every other building in town was either boarded up or a brand new upscale boutique, the only kind of business that could survive there in the face of Walmart. Here's what one business owner on Georgia Avenue had to say about the proposed Georgia Avenue Walmart.
All right, well, as I was saying, my name is Zach Mason. I'm co-owner of a business down the street called Art Under Pressure. We're a graphic design, skateboard, clothing, and art store. And basically, I mean, I've been opposed to Walmart for a long time for a lot of reasons. Even before I was a local business owner, I hate the bigoted campaigns that they support on a national level and all that kind of stuff. But now, you know, here we are in the community and facing, you know, having them come just a mile or so up the street from where we're located. And it'll certainly, you know, negatively impact the business. And, you know, I mean, having, you know, come into a community and been part of opening a business in a small business, I really have felt what it means to reinvest in that community and seen how real it is that the money that comes into our business flows back out into the community. And knowing that, you know, that's not what happens with a place like Walmart. Everything that people in the neighborhood spend here at this site, if they are able to open this Walmart, those profits are going to be sucked out to corporate headquarters. Whereas when people spend at a local business like, you know, Art Under Pressure or one of these shops across the street, that money stays here in the community. I think that's one of the most important arguments why local governments should not pave the way and just really invite these big nasty corporations into the community, because we all know that, you know, the few jobs that they create will be offset by, you know, the jobs that they take away and the resources that they'll drain out of this community instead of bringing something to offer. So
there are very few cities in the Northeast that will welcome or even tolerate Walmart, their sweatshop suppliers, the destruction of all other retail, and their abominable wages and benefits. D.C. has been a strange exception. The community is dead set on keeping Walmart out, yet the mayor and several city council members seem to be in Walmart's corner and in their pocket. Of course, with all the bribery and campaign cash scandals swirling around Mayor Gray, it seems obvious how Walmart has managed to get this sort of support from the city government.
Well, DNA is natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one dependent on another, and so the circle had closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows that grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
The year 2012 is on track to be the hottest in recorded history, while high temperatures and drought conditions have been linked to destructive forest fires and other natural disasters that are exactly the kinds of occurrences that climate scientists have predicted will come with global warming. Yet the June Rio Plus 20 United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, which commemorated the first Earth Summit held in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil in 1992, was widely criticized as a failure for producing an international agreement which lacks enforceable commitments to confront and reverse climate change. Mark Hertzgard, author of Earth Odyssey, reports on the environment for The Nation magazine, Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, and other publications. His newest book is titled Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth, which he wrote for his daughter's generation. Hertzgard says after his daughter Kiara was born 7 years ago, he became even more adamant about addressing climate change and holding to account the political and business leaders who ignore the Earth's and its people's plight. In his book, he notes that climate change has arrived almost a century ahead of predictions. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Mark Hertzgard about the worsening weather and environmental conditions connected with climate change and a new group he's organizing called Climate Parents.
We are living with climate change now. It is going to get worse simply because of the inertia, the physical inertia of the climate system, the fact that carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for decades after it's emitted. So we've got a big job ahead of us, there's no doubt. And meanwhile, we've got the President of the United States not saying a word about global warming, even though he knows perfectly well what the science tells him. We don't see any real leadership coming from the national level. So I think it really is going to, as always in history, it's really going to rely on people from the bottom organizing together and forcing their leaders to do what's right. And that's something that I'm getting started now with a group called Climate Parents. We want to try and organize and mobilize parents around the climate issue because it certainly endangers climate change endangers the thing that we all hold most dear in our lives, which is our kids.
Say more about Climate Parents.
Climate Parents is a new group that a number of us are just beginning now. And its agenda is simple. We think that parents are the single most underorganized constituency on climate change, which is quite bizarre when you think of what's at stake for our kids. And so what we want to do is to give voice and political impact to parents across the country and across the partisan political spectrum. We don't believe that climate change should be a partisan political issue because we think all parents want to have a safe and healthy future for their kids. But we also think that dealing with the climate issue now is part of your job description as a parent, just like providing your kid with proper food and clothing and shelter and health care and all those things. Climate change and dealing with it is now part of the job description of being a parent because we now know that my daughter, Kiara, who's 7 years old, she and the rest of her generation are now fated to spend the rest of their lives coping with what will be the hottest and most volatile climate in the 10,000 years of human civilization. So you can think of today's young people as what I call Generation Hot. And we owe it to them, having put them in this predicament. We owe it to them as their parents, their grandparents, their aunts and uncles, anyone who cares about young people. We owe it to them to try and find the ways to let them cope with this problem successfully. And let's emphasize here, we know how to deal with climate change. We have the solutions. We know what to do technologically It's all there, solar and wind power and geothermal and energy efficiency and all of the other solutions. I go into them in great depth in my book, Hot. That's not the problem. The problem is the lack of political will and the fact that our government is still under the control of very large business interests who profit from the current situation. The oil companies, the coal companies, natural gas. I mean, it is remarkable and bizarre that our tax dollars are now being spent in the billions to subsidize ExxonMobil, the single richest, most profitable corporation in human history. We are subsidizing them to wreck the climate for our kids.
Mark Hertzgard, so this is a group to apply political pressure on officials.
We do think that it does have to be political involvement. It's nice and it's important as a first step for a family to change their lifestyle choices and the consumption patterns so that maybe you take mass transit more often than the car. Maybe you eat less meat, more vegetables, and, take the bicycle and all of these sorts of, there's a lot of personal lifestyle changes that you can make, and those are useful. But they are much, much less than what is necessary to solve this problem. As long as we have an economic system and rules of the road economically that essentially allow carbon dioxide pollution to be emitted for free, nobody pays a price for that, certainly not the corporations or us, the consumers. It's not incorporated into the price. Indeed, as I said, we're subsidizing oil and coal and natural gas. As long as that's the case, we can't make much difference. We've got to change the main drivers of climate change, and those are the government policies and the business practices of today's world. We can do this. We know how to do this. It's a matter of changing the big political decisions, and that requires people to get involved in politics. I know for some people that's about as enticing a prospect as getting a root canal, but I just would remind you, especially if you're a parent or a grandparent, that, there's a lot of things that we don't really feel like doing, but we do them because they will make a difference for our kids.
That was journalist and author Mark Hertzgard. Learn more about his group, Climate Parents, and the effects of climate change on weather and the environment by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Pepco must be controlled by climate change deniers. For the past 10 years, as evidence of global climate change began to pile up, Pepco has reduced their workforce of linemen, those who go up to poles and fix the wires, by half. They admitted this in an interview with WUSA, TV9 News, the interview Pepco walked out on. Pepco has more customers now than it did 10 years ago. Climate change means more and worse storms, yet Pepco has cut their repair workers' jobs. Is it any wonder people get to sit in the heat while all their food rots in a refrigerator?
50 million years ago, we walked upon the planet, so thought of all that you could see, just a little bit like me, walking in your footsteps, walking in your footsteps.
Until 3 years ago, we never saw massive multi-day power outages in the D.C. area, except from Hurricane Belle in 1973, Hurricane Isabel in 2003, 30 years later, and a 1999 ice storm. Now we've had 3 summers in a row featuring major power outages, and 2010 had them in the winter too from the blizzards. First 2010 blizzards turned out the lights for days on end. That same year, 2010, featured incredible heat in mid-July, followed by violent thunderstorms ending in power outages of nearly a week. Sound familiar? The next year came Hurricane Irene and another round of power outages. Meanwhile, Pepco has gotten a reputation for power failures at random times. Finally, June 29th's 104-degree heat spawned the Derrico storms. Again, even after 3 rounds of outages, Pepco's half-sized workforce meant repairs took twice as long until crews could be flown in from places as far away as Canada. Had Pepco not reduced their workforce, twice as many people would have had their electricity turned back on June 30th and July 1st before most out-of-area crews arrived. Pepco has, by their practice of reducing jobs, been denying both climate change and regional growth. Pepco is continuing to buy half their electricity from coal-fired power plants, and part of that from power plants burning mountaintop removal coal is also a form of climate change denial. It looks like we're in for a perfect storm of trouble as climate change and budget cuts hit us at the same time. Local weather is controlled by the jet stream winds, which act like a fire hose that has been turned on and dropped. Global climate change at levels that are hard to measure can increase energy in the jet stream, like putting more pressure in that fire hose. The result is more extreme weather of all types, even as utilities fought for budget cuts. In years to come, electrical power will become unreliable as what used to be 10-year storms will become normal weather events. With electrical power becoming unreliable and oil becoming ever more expensive, the Great Recession could well become permanent, thus reducing coal and oil consumption and carbon dioxide emissions, but maybe too late. Still think we aren't part of Earth's natural cycles and stand above them instead? In the end, this is the sort of thing that brings empires and civilizations to their knees. With enough coal and oil consumption, today's children will literally inherit the wind.
Is a form of natural gas drilling, an alternative to oil, cause the oil kept spilling, bringing jobs to small towns, so everybody's willing. People turn on the lights and the drillers make a killing.
Water goes into the pipe into the ground. The pressure cranes fissures 7,000 feet down. The cracks release the gas that powers your town. That will is frack, yeah, totally frack.
But there's more in the water than just H2O. Toxic chemicals help to make the fluid flow. With names like benzene and formaldehyde, you better keep them far away from the water supply.
The drillers say the fissures are a mile below the groundwater pumped into American homes, but don't tell it to the residents of Sublet Wayo, that water's frack. We're talking benzene.
What the frack is going on with all this fracking going on? I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think my water's on fire tonight.
So it all goes back to 2005. Bush said gas drillers didn't have to comply with the Safe Drinking Water Act before too long. It was frack, baby, frack until the break of dawn.
With the EPA out, it was up to the states, but they didn't have the money to investigate. Sick people couldn't prove fracking was to blame. All the while, water wells were going up in flames.
Cause it's hard to contain all the methane released. It can get into the air, it can get into the streams. It's a greenhouse gas worse than CO2. Fracking done wrong could lead to climate change too.
Now it's not that drillers should never be fracking, but the current regulation is severely lacking. Reduce the toxins, contain the gas and wastewater, and the people will get sick and the planet will get hotter.
What the frack is going on with all this fracking going on? I think we need some facts to come to light. I know we want our energy, but nothing ever comes for free. I think our water's on fire tonight.
criticizing McDonald's.
Stabbing the back with clown fat, so we get fat with the beat, not with the meat. And we fight right back with fat funk against this fast food junk. A propaganda pumping punks calling it food. I think they're confused. A killer sweet treat to see, let loose a few. For a fast food attitude, mad cow, cash cop mentality. Growing instant gratification, sowing seeds of slavery. It's happened up the pace of the lab rat race. The soma coma kamikaze selling pig fat as milkshakes. Border slaughter trauma, sick cows line mass graves. Serve you up a dead planet on the skin bones of slaves. Serve you up a dead planet on the skin bones of slaves.
Mass production, mass society, everything the same, junk food, crap jobs.
The high fat intake, the high animal protein intake, the lack of these other things lead into the kind of diseases that actually kill 3/4 of us in Western society before our time.
This Ronnie Mac heart attack packed is manufacturing, distracting plastic package, false facts, hormone pump, disease, dump, cow pus, and clown fat.
Yum.
Got truth trembling on the corporate water torture rack.
Would you like lies with that?
Or fries with beef fat? What about terrified cries of forests falling for Big Macs? Genetically modified alibis for the starving poor. Third world food stolen for Mac's first world exports. Straight to your first world, first class, neoliberal sat on a fat ass. Free market disaster task, I gotta ask. How much land did you steal for that happy meal? Yeah, it's a crappy deal when you see the lives it killed.
Third world debt.
Yeah, it's a crappy deal when you see the lives it killed.
These are the most important issues I think that any of us have to face living our ordinary lives.
Just destroying rainforests.
Without advertising, McDonald's wouldn't exist. It's all image, and you know, if you can get behind that and expose the reality of the corporation, then you know, there's nothing left.
Just destroying rainforests.
Deep-fried lies for another colonized genocide attempt. Fat corporate cats hell-bent on monoculture, madness and mayhem to rupture the structure of diversity. Its heresy embarrasses me, the golden arch glory of modern humanity. The greasy green feast of fearful disease meat, turning animals into cannibals and humans into sheep. You're being cloned like robots in a war machine factory, cause they're harvesting lies like they be harvesting wheat. Overworked employer, exploited, underpaid. The youth of today being waylaid into early graves. By fat corporate cats, deep-fried desires, hellfires and death bars upsize. Dissolving, remolding their lives in animal fat. It's a cannibal act, a criminal fact. The capital pact is stabbing you in the back, yeah. Deep-fried in animal fat, it's a cannibal act. The capital pact is stabbing you in the back with a criminal fact. Golden arch, idealistic, satanic, a demolition religion. Your monoculture style is genocide. Full-scale culture assaulter like a Christian mission. Your mindshare warfare is totalitarian tunnel vision. Your mindshare warfare is totalitarian tunnel vision. It's mindfucker-tucker terrorism.
Mindfucker-tucker terrorism. Research shows that the golden arches are now more recognized than the Christian cross.
Yeah, I ain't bowing down to no pedophile clown. No raping the minds of children, turning smiles to frowns. So we shouting out loud with our stereo sound. Bring the whole fat evil Mac empire down.
Criticizing McDonald's.